what I'm hoping that we can do is really have a discussion rather than this being a presentation by me. I'd like to start off by telling you who I am. My name is Tamara Myers, and I go to school at the University of Washington. I'm working on my PhD there in, I guess it's changed over the years. Currently, I guess I'm calling it Liberatory Education or Education for Revolution, but it's really gone under a variety of different names, from multiculturalism to critical pedagogy to education for liberation to education for social justice. And all along, I've been kind of tweaking the name and trying to figure out what exactly it is I'm doing there. And I'm still in that process. And I imagine I'll be engaged in that process all along. And that's fine with me. I'd also like to tell you a little bit about my my background, my family background, because I think that has everything to do with education and the kind of stuff that I'd like us to be talking about, at least in part today. My undergraduate work and then my graduate work and kind of where I am philosophically with education. And then what I hope we can do is really kind of bring all of our experiences with education and pedagogy to bear on this discussion as we kind of like imagine what kind of education, what kind of educational institutions, what kind of pedagogy, what kinds of practices can provide us with the kind of experiences we need for ourselves and for others to build the kind of society that we as anarchists are imagining. So my background is I grew up in Lynnwood, which is a suburb of Seattle, it's a pretty white, conservative place. And I grew up in a low-income, all-female, matriarchal family that was atheist. So we were different than kind of the community in a lot of ways. And my mother was a really anti-authoritarian parent, and really sort of critical pedagogue. Basically, my first experience with critical pedagogy was with my mama. And she raised us to question authority, to be critical of authority in all its forms. So I grew up really like looking at being critical of the adult-child relationships that I saw around me, and that meant that I was looking at my own schooling experiences in very different ways than a lot of my peers were. And I don't know that I brought the sort of kind of anti-capitalist analysis to my work pretty early. We were basically socialist from early on, and I have this memory of the way that we dealt with money in my family, and I tell people, and it really like has continued to influence the way that I've been all my life. We had this thing, the money is on the table, and that was kind of the motto that that we lived by, and basically that meant the money was literally on the table in my family. For anyone, kids, adults, whoever needed it, it was just there for all of us to use. So that kind of challenged our traditional, like, capitalism, basically. That was my early experience with different relationships to money. And helped us to develop, a feminist critique pretty early on, because we were an all-female family. And living in a patriarchal society, that was there from the get-go. I think it was a little later that I started to develop my critique of kind of white supremacy and racism, but that happened in high school, as most of my friends were people of color from the school I went to. And that continued into my work in college, where I studied American ethnic studies and basically started really looking at the systems of oppression, the various systems of oppression that we're living with in our society, looking at white supremacy and racism, looking at patriarchy and sexism and heterosexism, looking at capitalism. And as an undergraduate, I started to get into what a lot of people kind of call identity politics. So looking at those systems, but also looking at the ways that those systems impact our lives in very particular ways, and the ways that they overlap and inform our experiences as, you know, whatever our identities happen to be. And spent a lot of time starting to move into sort of a multicultural education sort of direction, grounded in that kind of identity politics. And I'm saying identity politics not in the sort of pejorative way that that some people use that word, because I think that the critiques that are there, and I think that the knowledge that's been created by sort of the field of multicultural education and related fields have provided us with a lot of really important information about how the systems of oppression that we live with work. So I came into my master's work in multicultural education, asking questions like how are various groups impacted by the kind of educational systems that we have today and the educational practices that we have today. So I looked at questions of like gender disparity in education and how girls are treated differently than boys and how people of color groups are treated differently than white kids and how that affects kind of the outcomes of education. And the more I moved through it, the more I started thinking about like resistance and looking at the ways various groups resist. And then the more I started continued to move through there and develop ideas about what alternatives I wanted to see rather than just focusing on the critique, moving toward like the alternatives that we ought to be developing. And I'm really continuing to move in that direction today. I guess the work that I do today, it's really, some of you were in the discussion earlier, and I'm not sure how much I indicated this, but I'm working on my PhD in liberatory education, and that's a really tremendously like broad field of inquiry. And as an anarchist and as a radical sort of pedagogue, one of the challenges that I see and one of the challenges that I see for people who want to do liberatory education and for anarchists in general is that I feel like we have this need to understand, like, we have this overarching, like critique of all domination and hierarchy. And in order to do that well, I feel like we need to completely understand, like, political theory, social theory, economic theory. We need to understand ecology. We need to understand, like everything. And there's no way to do that. And the other challenge for me as a radical academic, and that some of you probably also face, is that in the academy and in the university settings, we're pushed more and more into kind of funneling our interests. You start at the wide end of the funnel and you come out the narrow end. So you specialize more and more so that you end up with this a whole lot of knowledge about this narrow little slice of the world. And that's really problematic if you're interested in a more general, large critique. So that's where I am academically right now, is trying to figure out how to bring that general critique of hierarchy, all forms of hierarchy and domination, into my work, and how to bring that into my liberatory education work. Now, in our discussion earlier this morning, could I just see hands of the people that were in the discussion on theory and the academy earlier this morning? Stick your hands up high. Okay, so there were about maybe half and half. We had this really, what I felt like was a really great discussion, and I was really excited about it, and there were so many questions that I wanted to ask that I didn't get to ask, and we're not going to be able to address here, but there were a lot of questions raised that I was super psyched about, and I'm so excited that there are so many people here that I've had so many wonderful conversations with already, just in the library last night and wherever, about education, and there's so much like knowledge sitting in this little tent that I hope we can kind of get moving in an awesome direction. But there are so many people that I'm concerned that that's not going to happen to the degree that I want it to happen. So what I'd like to propose right now is that if there are people interested in continuing this conversation beyond, you know, whatever time we do it, go until today. What time do we go until today? Does anybody know? Like an hour from now or something? Okay. There's some time on Sunday, and if there are people who are going to be around, I would like to continue whatever conversation stops today out of the campfire tonight, maybe tomorrow, and maybe more deliberately on Sunday. So that's just a heads up for people to know. So there were some awesome questions raised in Andrea and Blake's discussion earlier today about anarchists and academia. And we started to talk about critical pedagogy was raised and what kinds of institutions we need to support liberatory education was raised. Both of those issues were raised. And I hope what we can do is kind of continue that discussion. We also talked a lot about the role of theory and what theory is and how we can reconceptualize theory in various ways. And so I'd like to just kind of open up this discussion and see where you guys are at and see what you want to talk about. Has anybody got a starting place? And broadly, the question is, what does liberatory education look like?
Role of education in social movements.
The role of education in social movements?
Social movements, what that looks like in a non-academic setting. Perhaps just emphasis on that.
Do you have thoughts about that, Blair?
That's just something I'd like to throw out there that we talked about earlier today, some of us being people that had either recently graduated from college or whatever and wanting to continue that but not feeling that we could really do that in an academic setting or having questions as to that.
Right.
And maybe as revolutionaries first and academics second, developing a set of criteria questions as to how we can focus those educational commitments. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, just keeping those clear in our head. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of times we get muddled.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't at the discussion this morning, but the question that you just posed, my response is that it's not necessarily focused just on historical facts or just pieces of information, but it's also a way of thinking,
yeah.
A way of questioning, and a sort of inclination to question taken for granted assumptions mm-hmm. about things.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of my work, a lot of my own work in philosophy draws on the work of Paulo Freire, and it's a guy named Peter McLaren that does a lot of work that also draws on Paulo Freire's work, and there are a whole host of other people that I kind of have borrowed my own theory from and built it on. And I think that's a really important thing. Critical pedagogy is much more than just it's much more than content, and it's much more than just kind of a set of skills or a set of practices that you would use in an educational setting. It is a disposition and a philosophy and an overall kind of way of approaching changing the world, I think. Yeah, I think that's important.
I mean, as another topic, I'd like to talk about radical perspectives on bilingualism and polylingualism in education.
Would you like to...
Well, I mean... I mean, if that's of interest to other people, then I think there's a lot to be thought through. I've been giving a lot of thought to the fact that most of my intellectual work happens in English, although it's not necessarily the way I want it to be. And that a lot of my intellectual work happens with people who are monolingual. So I may be interested to hear from people who are bilingual about how they negotiate those situations, whether or not they're in a situation like mine. And I'd be interested to hear, whatever, from the variety of perspectives that this sort of question opens up. And I guess part of this has to do with language education specifically. And radical perspectives on that, and part of it just has to do with infusing bilingualism and polylingualism into all areas of education.
I want to, one of my suspicions here is that we've, because this is such a large group and because education, liberatory education, is such a broad field, I think we're going to have a lot of kind of divergent interests, and a lot of topics are going to come up, and I'm concerned about how we're going to approach all of those in the next little while. So before we finish, what I'd like to do, and kind of maybe as we go along, maybe right now what we can do is kind of I'd like to get a sense of what kinds of questions there are out here that we may be able to kind of try to tackle in the next hour or so. And we've got a couple right now, and I'd like to get a sense of what the other sort of burning questions are, maybe larger kind of topics. Quinn?
In this morning's conversation, we talked mostly about, obviously, like, higher education and the academy, and my focus of my BA is liberatory education as well, and I'm thinking about it more in terms of on the compulsory education level and how we start to change what we see as learning and education in this society completely, because I think it starts at whatever age we're starting to be taught things, whether, three or four or five, and I have real issues with compulsory education, but just starting to talk about, like, what the alternatives are that can be accessible to not just privileged people, and how we change the dynamics of what we see as learning and education throughout our lives.
Are you, now a lot of your interests are in sort of homeschooling, unschooling, de-schooling stuff. Do you have...
My personal, like, background as far as what I've been studying so far has been, like, the de-schooling movement and unschooling and things like that. My issues with that currently, and I don't know how much people know about unschooling and de-schooling, but it's really inaccessible to people who are supporting families and stuff like that. So I'm just interested in people, if people have ideas or have any interest in talking about how we start to develop alternatives to the ways we educate ourselves, and especially children, and how we make learning and education something that isn't this horrible thing anymore, especially compulsory education.
Sean?
A related thing to what Quinn just said was how to make education not just something that happens in a special place or a special time, but something that's integrated with the life of the community, so that you're tapping into and redeploying resources in the community that are otherwise not being, are being wasted, you know, because there's no access and no connecting.
If someone is interested in elementary education, heading off to be an elementary school teacher and trying to figure out what I think about public school, and I'm very new to all of this, I guess I'm interested in civics, sort of, or what are the tools, what are the skills that we need to teach children to actually be able to, you know, lead a discussion, you know, consensus. How, at what age do you start teaching kids those skills, and what would those skills actually be?
And I hope as we go along here, one of the values of a discussion like this, where we're obviously not going to be able to address all these questions, is that you will see who one another are. Like, if you have similar questions, make sure to connect later. And I'll certainly be connecting with everybody. What's your name?
I'm Harry.
Harry?
I think maybe an important question would be how to connect education with a lot of our campaigns, our direct action campaigns in particular. I mean, how much education is needed to partake in a campaign? What level of education are you aiming for? Who's the audience? And I just remember during the inauguration, you know, Black Bloc madness, people saying, well, you know, people don't know what anarchists think of democracy. We need to not do a direct action on the parade route. We need to spread our message more. And, we need to direct it. And then there was the opposing camp. And I think I've seen this conflict arise, like, many times. Sort of interesting what people think about it.
Can you talk more? I'm not sure I'm understanding your...
So what people think about, you know, whenever you do a campaign, you sort of have, at least with mine, you have sort of two sides. You have the educational aspect. You want to do teach-ins, you know, spread propaganda,
right.
You know, talk at schools. And you have the sort of action component. You have some type of direct action upon the subject. And, like, sort of how those two are related and how sometimes they compete for time and resources. How would you train? I mean, in a sort of liberatory educational process, I think you'd want to emphasize direct action of some type. But then, do you want, you know, action junkies, or do you want academics? You know, where's the, is there a middle ground?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Tell me your name again.
Ethan.
Ethan. All right.
Well, I get building on that. I'm interested in thinking about how we can create spaces where action junkies and academics and farmers and all sorts of people with a lot of different kinds of gifts and a lot of different kinds of skills can actually coexist in a similar space, whether it be a physical space or some other kind of convergent space. But to move beyond this model, especially in academics, to move beyond this model of disciplines where everything's segmented and segregated, and thinking about, you know, how do we build more sort of project transformation-oriented structures where all these different skills can come to bear, because that's what has to happen if change is going to happen. You know, and so how do we create institutions or structures where academics and theory heads are in the same space as organizers, the same space as popular educators, the same space as people working on the creation of alternatives, so that all those things are cross-fertilizing all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what would that look like? How would you actually negotiate the real on-the-ground dynamics of creating some kind of space or institution like that?
Frank?
Yeah.
Is that right, Frank?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to piggyback on that, too. And that's an area I'd be concerned with, is how do you create an environment that fosters the broadening and exchange of skills, you know, all kinds of skills. And it could even be practical skills, anything from, like, auto mechanics to bike repair to, you know, talking about political theory to art, you know. I mean, I know they sound awfully broad-brained, but you know, piggyback on what you're saying, is create that kind of space where that can be encouraged and that can happen for people, for community-wide, not for kids certainly, but for anybody who wants to come in and just, you know, and just wants, you know, I mean, I think one of the biggest problems we have in society in general is just, you know, if anything we've seen, especially on the Capitol, for all the new technologies, we've seen a lot of de-skilling, you know. People are good at one particular thing, but then, you know, outside that little sphere, you know, they're like, you know, how many people know about how media works? You know, how many people know about how to fix something minor on their car, anything like that? You know, that renders us powerless, and we can't talk about you know functioning in a society that's like, you know, non-hierarchical and you know not riven with structures of domination until, you know, if we had a broader environment for expanding our skills, we would feel a lot more confident as human beings and a lot less subject to the types of domination that, you know, we experience. So I'm really interested in that.
Dave.
I'm interested, it's a lot of fun to try to make a non-liberatory educational space a liberatory educational space. Try to think about ways you can do that, like the classroom or like the subway train.
Well, so we've generated a lot of questions here and a lot of sort of different kinds of questions, although there are some general themes. I'm going to go ahead and make a decision here, and I've kind of got, I think I've got everybody's question down, and hopefully we can start making some ties together to some of the issues that have been raised. But I'd like to go ahead with the question that I think Ethan raised, and that ties into what some other people have said, of trying to create alternative kinds of institutions. Could you reframe your question again? Could you rephrase it? Yes.
It was about thinking about models for alternative institutions that are convergent spaces for a lot of different kinds of people with a lot of different skills and gifts to be able to come together in one space and be bringing all those things to bear on positive, well, projects, either defensive, offensive, creative projects, whatever, of social transformation and revolution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what kind of models can we think about for what that would look like?
And I know that I've spoken with enough people in here to know that there are a lot of people who've been involved with a lot of rad educational, like, projects, organizations, whatever. And so I hope you guys will bring kind of that experience.
Just slap me down if you think this is wrong. It's a proposal that I've just been sort of, like, polling by a couple of people.
Yeah.
Small groups with report back.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, good. You're going that way. Good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I was thinking that I would like to do that and like to get a sense of how many people would like to do small groups. Yeah. And
way too much to do it all together.
Okay. Right. So, how about we've got this alternative institution question. We've got the people who want to work kind of within, like, public schools maybe as they exist and how to do liberatory education there. That's kind of related to the thing that you raised. What are the other broad themes that you have your bilingual question? What are the other pieces?
How to make it accessible, popular education or whatever, de-schooling, unschooling.
How to make
it accessible.
Related to Quinn's question. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there other pieces that don't feel like, are there other burning questions that people don't feel like are getting addressed by those groups? Okay. Let's try to break down into those groups, and if there are people who feel like they don't have a place to be, then we'll see where to go from there. Okay? So, over here, alternative institutions, within current institutions, what do you want to do?
I mean, if enough people want to talk about bilingualism, we'll do it. If not, I'll join one of the other ones.
Okay.
The others.
Unschooling, de-schooling, homeschooling. No? Does that not feel? You're right, because I kind
Shane,
of...
Shane, yeah. Yeah. I guess my more what I would be interested to talk about, and there could be a different group too, would be just the changing our perception of what education and learning are.
Okay.
It's a much more general topic.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
could
and
include
that,
unschooling and de-schooling and homeschooling.
Yeah, and that connects with what some people over here
what Sean was saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't we have one group... We need some, like, shade and stuff. But we need to stay in the area because I'd like us to be able to come back together pretty quickly. So
there's room in the washout.
Okay, Quinn, why don't you take... Quinn and Charlotte?
Sure.
Go to the wash house?
I want to do something on accessibility, though. Making, like, this table of education accessible. Is that out? Are there people who are interested in that?
Sure.
Okay, maybe not.
Does that feel connected to you?
I feel like that's connected to what
okay.
I feel like. I mean,
sure.
But, or
that's how I was, yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Okay.
Then.
And a group here,
can just follow me
and we'll see whether okay. people want to join you and talk about bilingualism. So you guys in there and the rest of the group in here. And we can break down further if we need to.